flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton bedding from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with airy blankets, cloud-like duvets, and breathable sheets. You'll experience pure comfort on night one and feel your bedding get softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com with code ODYSSEY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Okay, business leaders, are you playing defense or are you on the offense? Are you just, excuse me, hey, I'm trying to talk business here. As I was saying, are you here just to play or are you playing to win? If you're in it to win, meet your next MVP, NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is your full business management system in one suite. With NetSuite, you're running your accounting, your financials, HR, e-commerce, and more, all from your online dashboard. One source of truth means every department's working from the same numbers with no data delays. And with AI embedded throughout, you're automating manual tasks, plus getting fast insights for your next move. Whether you're competing on your home turf or looking to conquer international markets, NetSuite helps you get the W. Over 40,000 businesses have already made the move to NetSuite, the number one cloud ERP.
Right now, get the CFO's Guide to AI and Machine Learning at netsuite.com/special. Get this free guide at netsuite.com/special.
Okay, guys.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast. It's 8 o'clock. It is Tuesday. It's time to get petty. 713-572-4610. We do this every Tuesday. Gotten texts from a few people lately saying that they really have enjoyed the evolution of the Pettycast on Tuesdays. Now, as you pointed out, we stay petty on this show pretty much all the time.
But this is specifically devoted to it.
Yeah.
This is like our recital, our pettiness recital.
Well, it's also a segment where we allow other people's pettiness to seep into it. Some of it's ours, yeah. And some of it is other people's. It's just
we are petty. We are at our best when we are at our worst as human beings.
You and I.
And, yeah.
Ironically, you and I are going to be the best in the world by being the worst versions of ourselves.
Exactly.
That's straight irony.
It's a pretty proven strategy in many realms of life.
It's true. It is true. All right, so let's get to it here. This is going to be me for sure getting petty, and I'm guessing Seth was probably not really really in line with this next person we're going to hear with his encouragement after the game. Am I accurate about this, Seth?
Yeah, this is petty on multiple different... We can be petty about this on multiple different levels because Nate Burleson is speaking down to people on multiple different levels.
Thank you. Yeah, here's Nate Burleson of the CBS studio show following the Chiefs' win over the Bills in the AFC title game.
To the fan bases out there, if you're not a Chiefs fan, that's okay. But resist the urge to fall for the narrative that we're tired of seeing them win, that we might be fatigued of watching KC go to the Super Bowl over and over again. You are witnessing greatness, and just be happy that you are alive to be there to see it.
Yeah, I get angrier listening to that every time. It's not a narrative. Yeah. It's how people feel.
That's exactly what angered me about it. Yeah. Wait, resist the urge to succumb to the narrative? If you're looking at the narrative, the sports media types are nothing but gushing about how incredible the Chiefs are and what have you. The narrative would be that you're talking to people like they are simpletons who can't make decisions for themselves. At least 40% of us can.
Yeah.
And there's no narrative that you should be tired of. Like, he's putting out the narrative in trying to tell you not to listen to a narrative, he's presenting you a narrative that he's trying to shame you into believing.
Right.
Oh, I should just be happy that I'm witnessing this.
Right.
I'm going to cast aside all of my competitive feelings about wanting my team to be better than everybody else. And I'm supposed to feel like just awed and grateful that I get to watch Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs.
Yeah.
What the hell are you talking about? This is such, and I've seen this all over from sports media types who obviously have zero clue or understanding how human beings actually operate.
Yep.
Oh, you shouldn't feel the way human beings feel. It's more important. It's more important that you go. I want you to go home and write in your journal 200 words on how lucky you are to be witnessing the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, yeah. No, Burleson's infuriating with this.
He needs to get fired from that job in the morning show too.
Insufferable.
That's bad for America.
Well,
bad for America.
He also hosts Hollywood Squares, and it kind of sucks. It's down the list of game shows.
I saw commercials for that. Yeah, I didn't even realize that was a thing again.
Yeah,
it looks like a lot of former sports stars.
You mean like in the squares, in the tic-tac-toe?
Yeah.
It's a mix of
everything. I
guess
those would be the ones they're showing during a football game. So those commercials, they chose those ones.
But Burleson's the host of it. So he's...
He's got a lot of jobs. I respect him for that, but that's maybe why he's spread too thin and he has a horrible take like that.
Well, that's the thing. I don't want to minimize like what he's done as someone who is just a very average wide receiver and nondescript wide receiver in the NFL. He's created quite the media empire for himself. Mm-hmm. Game show, morning TV, just outside of sports, and then
and
obviously
he's spreading himself too thin.
Yes,
he's lost touch with the NFL fan.
Lost touch with human beings
because he's speaking to a broad cross section of America on the morning coffee show there, and then he's speaking to the game show viewers on the other one, and he's forgotten how fans actually fan.
Yep. Apparently, Brittany Mahomes is feeling pretty petty about the Buffalo Bills fans. Earlier this season, Brittany Mahomes, wife of Patrick. Earlier this season, Bills fans went viral when they hung a Patrick Mahomes doll before a regular season game. Well, the doll was actually a Kermit the Frog puppet with a Chiefs jersey on it.
Yeah.
And they hung it before the game in effigy, I guess. I don't know. Like, they've, you know, that's... And Brittany Mahomes was not happy that this puppet of Kermit the Frog with her husband's jersey wearing it got hanged on social media and at the Bills... Chiefs game. They played in Buffalo earlier this year. Following the win by the Chiefs over the Bills on Sunday, Brittany Mahomes brought up the old stunt by Buffalo's fan base, saying that she will pray for Bills fans, hoping they become better people.
Oh, I get petty about people using praying for them as their version of pettiness.
Mm-hmm.
Sacrilegious, really.
It is.
I hope she burns in hell. That's where I go with that.
Okay.
Because you are sacrilegious on social media. Nobody ever does that. It's a bad example to set. So, stop with the sacrilege, Brittany Mahomes.
Do we remember this, Buffalo, she said. Absolutely disgusting. So as you go home tonight, I pray we become better people.
She's trying to take the morally superior stance there.
Okay. Now, Mahomes credit. Well, it's the petty cast, so I don't want to give too much credit. Holmes put up a gif of Kermit just sipping tea after the game.
I'll be petty for you calling it a gif, but other than that, stop it with that nonsense.
Is it? Okay.
I feel like he's done that before.
Yeah. Is it a gif or a gif? I've heard both.
It's a graphic interface something or other.
But
so
yet I've
GIF.
Heard people pronounce it gif. It's weird, yeah. So Brittany Mahomes.
I've heard people pronounce all kinds of things wrong, Sean.
Yeah, okay.
Hang you in effigy.
Okay. What puppet would Sean be if you hung him in effigy?
I saw Jackson Mahomes was talking some smack too on social media. Said something about like Super Bowl hates to see us coming. And all right, it is in New Orleans, Jackson. I'll just be careful. Odds are you end up in a human trafficking ring by the end of this week. So just head on a swivel, Jackson. Head on a swivel.
Brittany Mahomes in hell and Jackson Mahomes in a trafficking ring. This is a petty cast, people. This is a petty cast. All right, we played this one yesterday. As long as we're sticking with the Chiefs here. DeAndre Hopkins is a Kansas City Chief. DeAndre Hopkins does not forget how he left Houston back in 2020.
You know, man, I've been doubted. A lot of people wrote me off. You know, 12 years in the league, man. You know, I got traded for some pennies in my prom. So, you know, I just want to thank the organizations that gave me a shot. You know, I knew I could still go out here, make plays when I need to, draw double teams, and, play meaningful football.
All right, so that's Hopkins.
Am I supposed to be petty towards DeAndre Hopkins?
No. Hopkins is still petty towards the Texans is the purpose.
Oh, good. Yeah, we can endorse that pettiness. Yeah. Menihue, too. Menihue looks so petty towards the Texans. It's like he's sacking Jack Easterby himself when he sacks C.J. Stroud.
So Hopkins said in that cut, I was traded for pennies in my prime, I think he said. They're pennies in my prime, which this always allows us, Seth, to repurpose the memo that was sent out when Hopkins got traded, which had Jack Easterby's smudgy fingerprints all over this thing, where He licked his finger, stuck his finger out the window, and took the temperature of the city and was like, oh boy, the wind is blowing awfully hard in the direction against me and Bill O'Brien. Let's put out a memo and explain ourselves.
So the memo, for those of you, we're not going to read all these bullet points. Yeah. There were 58 bullet points, basically making points about how awesome the team was going to be over the next year. Yeah. But the one specifically addressing the Hopkins pick were the most insulting things I'd ever been fed by a person, an entity, a football team, whatever it might be, because they wanted you to believe. They wanted basically to be a complete moron to believe any of these or to look at them as valid points.
The two, I would say, not the two most insulting concepts in this memo. Yeah. We'll just hit those. The one is where they talk about the pick they got, a second round pick, 40th overall, is the area of the draft where you still get first round talent, air quotes, but the contract is less money and will bring a very talented, young, and cheap player to Houston for the next 4 years. They drafted Ross Blacklock with that pick.
Right,
They drafted Ross Blacklock, who I think was here for 2 years, maybe?
Yeah. And by the logic of it, it would suggest that you should always trade all of your first-round picks
back into
the second round because it's less money.
Right.
It was asking people to be idiots.
Right.
To be like, oh, wait, yeah, you know what? Boy, and then if you trade all those second-round picks for third-round picks, that's even more money you've got.
Right, right.
Yeah. I couldn't believe it as I was reading it. I honestly thought I was going crazy.
Yeah.
I did not understand how they were putting this logic on paper.
The second worst part of this was talking about this fourth round pick in 2021 that they got from Arizona as part of the deal, as an important part of the deal that nobody talks about. They say
nobody
that.
Nobody talks about it.
Should be a much better draft pick than the fourth round pick that we gave up in the deal for the 2020 draft, because Arizona is in a tough division.
The logic behind that also being because we're the Texans and we're super good, y'all. And how did that end up working out?
They were 4-12 that year. The Texans were.
How was Arizona though?
They were better than 4-12.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
So it was not likely a better pick. The other big part of it was too that they made the point that it's the deepest wide receiver class in years. So that second round pick is probably even more valuable. After trading away to DeAndre Hopkins, they drafted a defensive lineman. Just to recap, who was on the team for 2 years? Yes,
and traded their other second round pick for Brandon Cooks, who was not cheap at all.
Despite the fact that there are so many good wide receivers in the draft,
right. Dude, you put it best.
I was so insulted, and I remain insulted by that. The whole thing about that, going through that letter again and going through all those bullet points. It's like they had a brainstorming session and then walked away and published it. They're like, you know, in brainstorming where you just throw anything out there, some of it's going to be stupid, but you just get your mind flowing.
Yep.
That's how that organization operated. They operated like their brainstorm notes were the final draft of everything they did.
Yep.
We're like, oh, how about we do this? How about we do that? Sounds good to me. Let's go.
Put it on letterhead. Take all that and put it, cut and paste, put it on letterhead. Let's go. Boy, I do not miss Jack and Bill. Dallas,
David Johnson will be our starting running back and a key part of the offense. He's a tough, smart, dependable player.
Seth's not making that up.
And we need a
up.
Running back after letting Carlos Hyde leave.
Yep. Seth's not making that up. That was in the memo. The 100%. The Dallas Cowboys, we're doing the Pettycast here on a Tuesday. I'm going to give the Cowboys their credit. As janky an organization as they are, as embarrassing as the press conference yesterday was, introducing Brian Schottenheimer in spots, they somehow still managed to rent space in the head of Eagle and Commander fans on the actual day of the NFC title game. This is the one thing Commander and Eagle fans could agree upon in the parking lot before the game.
Dallas sucks! Dallas sucks! Dallas sucks! Dallas sucks!
They all agree that Dallas sucks. You're about to play in the NFC title game. Like, why are you worrying about the Cowboys?
I kind of get it because it was an intradivisional playoff game.
Yeah.
And you're also there kind of claiming your primacy as not just in the regular season, but also as the best team in the division.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Giants fans might have been. If anything, that was a shot at Giants fans because they wouldn't even be included in the insult.
Oh,
you're not even.
They're petty.
Yeah, we're not even going to include you in this.
Yeah. Congrats, Joe Shane and Brian
Dable. So this
is
appreciation for the pettiness of the for me.
Yeah.
I look at that as appreciation of the pettiness of the Eagles fans.
Yeah, for sure. Julian Edelman and Rob Gronkowski were on a podcast together, and they recounted how much Tom Brady hated. This is back in 2012, mind you.
When social media was just taking the world by storm.
It was kind of burgeoning at that point, but not all the stars were on it, including Brady, who was several years away from even, at least publicly, having an account that he was on. But back in 2012, Tom Brady, not a fan of Chad Ochocinco.
He was like the first guy with a million followers on Twitter in the NFL, I think.
He was.
Remember that?
I do remember that. And Tom absolutely hated him at first. Well, didn't hate him, but hated that he was on Twitter because he was Mr. Twitter. He had like 3 million followers. The second highest person was like 200,000 in the NFL. And this is in 2012. He got traded to the New England Patriots, and he's always on Twitter still. And Tom and Coach Belichick were just always grilling him like, oh, get off freaking Twitter. It doesn't help you. It never really affected his game back then. They just acted like it did.
Yeah, he just did things differently in New England.
Exactly. He didn't comply to it.
Chad did what Chad did.
The point is, where I'm getting to is, now Tom is Mr. Instagram and Mr. Twitter now. So that was the point I was getting to.
Right, I honestly, Seth, 90% of why I pulled that clip is Gronk laughing at the end of it.
I think partly too. Are we really certain that Brady wasn't just jealous of Ochocinco?
Oh, his million followers, maybe.
Yeah, the social media followers.
Yeah.
Maybe there was a little bit of that.
Could have been.
Hey, we're a team here. We're not individuals except for glory boy Tom Brady.
That's right. Brady, what a buzzkill. What a killjoy he was back then.
It reminded me when we were talking to Jonathan Joseph and Arian Foster in the pregame show a couple weeks ago before the playoff game.
Yep.
And they made the point that they always knew that DeMeco was going to be a coach, because even when he would walk into a group of players who might be cutting it up, everybody kind of got more subdued all of a sudden.
Yeah.
It was almost like a coach had walked in the room.
Yes.
That's probably how Tom Brady was, you know, around the locker room. They all loved him. They all knew he was their meal ticket and everything. But you got to filter what you're saying about old Bill Belichick when Tommy comes around.
Be quiet, guys. Yeah. Quiet down. Text message, the words tough, smart, and dependable trigger me.
I know. I saw it when I saw that was up on the wall of the Giants offices during Hard Knocks. Like, oh, they're doomed. Nope. You're still trying, because that originated with the Patriots too, and Brian Daboll had coached with the Patriots. They're trying too hard to be like New England. Not gonna work.
Someone's saying, why does it matter to Hopkins what he was traded for? Because I think players view it, if you get traded for pennies, as he would say, is a sign of disrespect. Like, they dumped me, you know, like,
right? It was an insult. Yeah. They just would get away. They wanted to get away from me. First and foremost, they wanted to get away from me more than anything else.
Yeah.
And that was a little bit how Bill O'Brien operated as a general manager. You could tell that he would get to a certain point in negotiations where he probably just said, like, I just want to be done with this. I don't want this guy in the room anymore.
100%.
Like with Clowney.
Yeah.
Clowney totally felt like, when you found out that the Texans were paying part of Clowney's salary, I feel like, who knows how it actually went. It just felt like the Seahawks at a certain point were like, hey, by the way, Bill, you really need the rust guard, and you also need to pay part of his salary. And this warranty. You're going to want the 10-year warranty. It was every add-on that they were trying to get to somebody who was just desperate to get a deal done.
Times are better now. It's nice having capable people. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. That's our Tuesday Pettycast right there. Hey, probably the most exciting regular season game of the Ime Udoka era was last night for the Rockets. We'll relive the magic of Amen Thompson coming up next.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply. Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Now 4.3 to go. Thompson on Brown into the lane. Got the shot up. 0.7 to go. Thompson gives the Rockets the lead.
Are you kidding me?
Richard! Oh, the Rockets win the game.
This is fun. And, you know, Amen Thompson, obviously a top five pick. He was picked fourth in the Wemby draft. Everybody was praying for Victor, and we got Amen Thompson here in Houston. And this has been fun. Like, I'm not going to say the most unlikely of all these to ascend to stardom, but you got seven, including Reed Sheppard, seven first-round picks on the team. And I think we all knew Amen Thompson had the potential to be a good player. He is, since getting put into the starting lineup, Seth, when Jabari Smith Jr. went out, he is flashing all-star, not even all-star potential. He's playing like an all-star right now.
Right. Yeah. And it's such a great development, because not only just for what we're seeing right now, but when Jabari Smith Jr. comes back, he's going to have time to work his way back in. The rotations and everything else during the playoffs get really intriguing when you hopefully keep everybody else healthy, but then have Amen Thompson playing the way he is right now. This is... for a team that a lot of people are looking at as, oh boy, do they need to add an extra piece or a different element or what have you? I'm feeling more and more confident, nay, cocky, about the fact that this Rockets team is fine just as it is.
Yeah, I almost want to. It's strange. Like, as I think it through, I definitely don't want someone like Jimmy Butler, who's agitating to get out, who's willing to get suspended.
He's currently suspended by his own team.
Yeah, for the third time this year.
For walking out of a shoot-around.
For the third time this year, he's suspended. And I'm not into having guys on my team that are willing to just forfeit $523,000 game checks. That's how much Jimmy Butler makes per game. $523,000.
What do you respect more, a guy like James Harden that will go to the shoot-around but then just stand around during an actual NBA game? Or,
that's a good question. At least,
if you had to choose, right. Or do you have a guy that at least, all right, if that's where you're going to act, you're not going to be an active cancer on the floor?
Is neither a good answer? Can I just say?
No, like, you have to choose one.
I got to choose either James. Okay, so you're making me choose either insubordinate Jimmy Butler or fat James Harden. I'm not going to pick between those two. You know what? Give me insubordinate Jimmy Butler, because at least you can tell him to go away. And
they won last night, did they not? Yeah, kind of the team can rally around it.
Yeah. Whereas Harden was, you play him and he's essentially sabotaging games because a career, not career, but for the previous several years, 30-point-a-game scorer, mysteriously is averaging only 17 a game all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. So, boy, thanks for giving me that choice. That was not easy, reliving that.
Love, marry, kill.
Okay.
James Harden, Jimmy Butler, Jackson Mahomes.
Okay, love, marry, kill. I would say love James Harden.
What do we say? Kiss, marry, kill. That's how you do the TG version of it.
Kiss, marry, kill. Yeah, kiss if you don't want to kill anybody. Kiss, marry, and eject or whatever.
No, kill him.
Okay.
But kiss.
James Harden, I would go kiss because he owns a restaurant. And fat James Harden, you could still go out to dinner and have a good time. Marry. No, that would be marry. I don't want to kiss any of them.
I feel like Jackson Mahomes is a surprising strong entry for kiss or marry.
Yeah, probably. Jimmy Butler.
The problem with either of those guys, you're marrying somebody that you know at some point is going to want a divorce.
Yeah.
So I think I'd want to marry Jackson Mahomes. That's how bad it got with James Harden, and we know that Harden's going to fall apart in the playoffs. Whereas Jackson seems to do all right in the playoffs. Marrying Jackson Mahomes.
No, he did. He had a good game on Sunday. You know,
yeah,
threw some shade at the Bills after the game.
Yeah,
you're absolutely right. This is by far the strangest conversation we've ever had on this show, and that's
so. I would marry James Harden and kill Jimmy Butler,
which means
I don't want to trade for him.
Right, right. So Amen Thompson. Since Amen Thompson got back from his suspension, remember when he was suspended for a couple games?
Mm-hmm.
For throwing Tyler Hero to the ground, hip toss.
Oh, yeah,
style.
Yeah, those are good times.
Those were good times. He's averaging nearly, if not over, I'm just looking at his game log. Like, he's routinely over 40 minutes a game. So he ain't going back to the bench. Like, he's a guy you have to have in the game, it feels like, especially when you're a little undermanned like the Rockets are right now with no Jabari Smith Jr. And yet, like, he looked fresh as a daisy down the stretch in a game last night where he played 41 minutes and 45 seconds last night.
Yeah.
And he's the guy making all the plays in the fourth quarter. He's the guy making these block shots where he's coming out of nowhere, saving the ball, transition, hitting the game-winning jumper. Like, this is...
The only guy that could send him to the bench is Tyler Hero. That's the only thing that slowed him down this year.
Yep. So that's cool. We're lucky, man. I was thinking about this during one of the breaks. Like, we've had two teams that have tried to execute like traditional style rebuilds where you tear it down to the studs,
yeah,
get high draft picks, pick a bunch of guys, and then you're hopefully good in a couple of years. And more often than not, those don't work out. Like, even though it's the most likely way to rebuild, you know, it's the highest probability way to rebuild a team of several low probability ways to rebuild a team. And the Rockets and the Texans almost in tandem have executed both of them really, really well. Like, the Texans have had a little bit of playoff success, which the Rockets haven't had. But I would say the Rockets have had, this season so far, really good success against good teams in the regular season, which I think the Texans would, you know, I think they would have rather had some good, you know, some better success in the regular season against good
teams. I would tend to, in at least one area, I think the Rockets have had even more of a structured rebuild in that they went out and got Ime Udoka when it was in a moment where, all right, there might have been more enticing suitors if people had waited. But the Rockets said, all right, listen, we know what it is. There's kind of a scandal up there in Boston. We looked into it. We're cool with it. Come on board. And they were aggressive in doing that. Which they had to do themselves. I feel like the Texans, there is that element of luck in that D'Amico is out there, but like the other top coaching candidates were being fed a whole lot of bad PR about the Texans. I don't think they could have landed as top notch of a coaching candidate if it hadn't been for the fact that D'Amico is a former player whose wife is from Houston.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I would say too, in terms of the structure of the rebuild, the Rockets were literally declaring this is phase one of the rebuild. This is phase two of the like phase one was bottoming out and accumulating all those draft picks. Phase two was Ime Udoka, like getting a better head coach and becoming competitive again, like becoming at least a 500 team. And now, man, they're like phase three, they're on a 45 degree trajectory in phase three right now, becoming a contender. Like, it's really cool, man. We're lucky. Some petties coming in on the text page in the aftermath of the petty cast. Let's see. What kind of friend is Alex Bregman? Altuve has fully put his loyalty and will to sacrifice on display, and Bregman is still trying to squeeze every penny out of the Astros, even though they've already offered him the most lucrative deal in franchise history.
We don't know all of... Oh, yeah, that last part is true. I thought he was going to say the most lucrative deal that Bregman's been offered. But, yeah, what the hell, Bregman? What kind of display of loyalty is this to your friend? The one guy who... And I also feel like Altuve is kind of the guy that volunteered to stay in the bunker as everybody else retreated, just to try to hold off the enemy a little bit longer. But he thought that maybe he thought it was going to be a heroic move that other people would follow suit.
Right.
You're like, guys, I'll stay behind and fight him off. And everybody else is like, okay, cool, see ya.
Moving to left field is Altuve throwing himself on a landmine or something. Like
sitting there behind my machine gun going like, oh, those sons of, well, I'll tell you what, I thought maybe they'd protest a little or something.
Dude,
yeah.
What do you think?
Bregman comes back into the bunker, but it's just to grab his canteen.
Hey, what do you think the reaction is going to be if Alex Bregman goes to one of these other suitors that we've heard so much about, like the Red Sox or the Cubs have gotten into the Cubs seem to have this fetish for former Astros right now. But it's one of those Correa deals where it's like a 3-year $90 million and he can opt out after 1 year, knowing full well the Astros offered 6 years, $156 million.
So he's basically, I mean, that's a good deal. I mean, you could argue on the surface of it all, that's still a better deal for the player if the player's got the opt outs. Now, if it's a 3 year, So if it's a 3 year deal, because Correa's was a, how long was Correa?
Well, Correa's first deal was just what I told you. It was a 3 year deal for $90 million, and he could opt out after each season if he wanted to.
Which basically makes you a free agent every single year if you have a really good year.
So he opted out, became a free agent, got two massive deals from the Giants and Mets, and they disqualified him physically, and he goes back to the Twins for a 6 year, $200 million deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if Alex Bregman got a deal where it's basically a shorter deal and he's just wanting to become a free agent in a year from now and he doesn't come back to the Astros, do you think Astro fans will be mad at him? That's my question.
Yes.
Okay. Gotcha.
I think they will.
Yeah.
I'm lost. No, I got lost somewhere.
Yeah,
in the
contracts. Yeah, the contract stuff. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. I'm going to tell you guys about a Vegas trip. How about that? A slam dunk trip to Vegas could be yours. How? By tuning in to Sports Radio 610 for an hour a day on the Odyssey app, live, rewind, or show podcast. It doesn't matter. Just listen to Sports Radio 610 or any participating station on the Odyssey app for 60 minutes to earn your daily entry. Then you and three friends could be wheels up to Vegas in March with an extra $5,000 in each of your pockets for the ultimate college basketball tournament experience. Just log in and listen now on the Odyssey app for your chance to win this national contest. Up next, let's do a little compare-contrast. Liam Cohen of the Jacksonville Jaguars had, I don't know if it was a disastrous press conference yesterday, but it wasn't great. If it was a disaster, this might be the best thing that's happened to the Jaguars. We will explain why and dig into the audio vault coming up next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. The Jacksonville Jaguars introduced their new coach yesterday. So we now know what we're up against here in the AFC South. Shane Steichen and Anthony Richardson in Indianapolis. Brian Callahan and whatever the Titans decide to do with the first overall pick in Nashville. And then in Jacksonville, it's going to be Trevor Lawrence and Liam Cohen, who the Jags bent over backwards to bring in. They fired their beloved, at least by the owner, GM, Trent Baalke, to get Liam Cohen into the building there. They may or may not have violated some Rooney rule. Violated the Rooney rule to get Liam Cohen in there. And Liam Cohen at his press conference yesterday, I don't know, I wasn't super impressed. I don't know how genuine he seems. He attempted at the very beginning of the press conference to endear himself, ingratiate himself to the Duval County audience there by doing the chant. Ben, do we have any of the actual correct chants still pulled up in there? The Duval chant. We got one? Okay, so here's what the Duval County, where Jacksonville is, the people love to chant this.
Duval!
Right? Here was Liam Cohen giving a go at it yesterday.
Duval!
Yeah. The internet went crazy.
I actually feel bad for Jaguars fans there. That you're right. He's getting up to the podium. You've talked yourself into this guy. You're set. You're ready to go. You start a new era. They're going to get a new GM. And then he gets up with that.
Duval. I mean,
he may as well have picked his nose immediately afterwards. You know, he botched the intro.
Yes.
It's all uphill after that. It's all uphill.
Yep. So he botched
it. You want a coach who pays attention to details. Like, maybe, like, how to say the chant you're about to say. The, just the little, hey, hey, guys, what do I do? Like, well, how am I supposed to do this? Duval, got it. Let's do this.
Yeah, he, well, he knew enough to volunteer that because he sat down. It was his opening statement, and he sat down and said, Jacksonville, community.
Duval.
Like, that's, that was his, that was the beginning of his, of his opening statement, if I'm not mistaken. He wasn't prompted. He's like, so the people didn't ask him, like, hey, do you know the Duval chant? Like, he came in knowing I'm going to do this. And that's, that would worry me about, you know, what his actual, like, research or book skills are, you know, like how attention to detail, right?
Yeah.
Attention to detail. So that was Liam Cohen. So somewhat of a disaster. I would say on the natural disaster scale of 1 to 10, you know, that's like a 6. It's not horrible because there have been some 10s the last few years. There have been some bad ones that got ridiculed nationally. Like, I don't see anybody talking about Liam Cohen on Get Up or anything this morning when it comes to that. This, though, got a lot of attention. Maybe Jacksonville should be excited because here was Dan Campbell back in 2021 at his opening press conference for the Lions job.
This team is going to take on the identity of this city, all right? And the city's been down, and it found a way to get up. All right, it's found a way to overcome adversity. All right, and so this team's going to be built on, we're going to kick you in the teeth. All right, and when you punch us back, we're going to smile at you. And when you knock us down, we're going to get up. And on the way up, we're going to bite a kneecap off. All right, and we're going to stand up. And then it's going to take two more shots to knock us down. All right, and on the way up, we're going to take your other kneecap and we're going to get up. And then it's going to take three shots to get us down. And when we do, we're going to take another hunk out of you. Before long, we're the, going to be the last one standing.
He
had a lot of. If we're talking about playoff games, then they've had some hunks taken out of them. But that, I'll be honest with you, in hindsight, knowing what he was able to do, and we all know this, we all know that. Yeah, he rebounded from that press conference just fine. I honestly listened to that. And I'm like, yeah, sounds reasonable. That's exactly the way
knowing now.
Hey, Sean, I once done seen a game where Jared Goff threw 5 interceptions and they came back and they got up off the ground and they bit the hell out of off of every kneecap on that Texan squad.
Yeah. Yep. We saw it with our own eyes, man.
But at the time, he was widely ridiculed for it.
He wanted to bite a third kneecap there, you could tell, when he said, we'll take another hunk.
Himself.
Yeah.
That's when I knew he was a real one.
We'll take another.
It was like, this guy knows anatomy. He was about to say another kneecap, and then he realized, like, nope. That's it's got to be a hunk of something else.
Yep. All right.
So he probably caught himself from saying, like, your left testicle.
So that worked out. That worked out for Detroit. So maybe Jacksonville should be excited. Now, here is Nick Sirianni at his introductory press conference again. This was widely ridiculed, and at times during Sirianni's tenure in Philly, they go back to this because he's not been on nearly the upward trajectory with the fan base there that Campbell has been in Detroit. Like, Sirianni, as we talked about with Ross Tucker a little bit earlier on the show, back in the 7 o'clock hour, you can listen to that on the Odyssey app. He's had a complicated relationship at times with the Philadelphia fan base. Here was Nick Sirianni of Philly in his introductory press conference.
Next thing that's very important to me is that we build a smart football team. That we have a smart football team here. And I know we have the people in place to do that. The first part of that, the first part of being smart is knowing what to do. We're gonna have systems in place that are easier to learn. All right, complicated to the defense or offense that they're going against or the special teams group they're going against, but easy for us to learn. Because when we can put that, when we can learn our system and we can get good at our system, then our talent can take over. Less thinking equals talent take over. But we need to have systems in place, and we will have systems in place.
You know what? In hindsight, again, obviously, it's worked out pretty well for Nick Sirianni. I think the biggest thing there was he was talking about like almost more of a philosophical thing. But he was doing it in like amped up 16-year-old voice and energy.
Yeah,
that was the hard part. It was like a guy who was super excited to do a book report. That's why I think it just didn't come off right.
I like less thinking equals talent takeover. Like it's algebra. It's LT equals TT. You know, I like that. I like that he can, you know, kind of lays it out simple like that for the
less
people.
Thinking equals talent takeover.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
The other, it's hard to sell to the masses sometimes less thinking, even though if you sit down and you explain it, it makes sense, but people hear dumb, I think.
Yeah.
I think they hear, oh, dumb. Okay. Yeah. That sounds dumb to me. Oh, and you're selling, because to the mind's eye, you want to see this complex, ornate offense. When the reality is, a lot of the complex, ornate offenses, at the core of it all, they are pretty simple. It's just that they find ways to make it look really complex.
All right. So Dan Campbell worked out for Detroit, I would say. Yeah. You know, they haven't made a Super Bowl or anything yet, but I think, you know, Dan Campbell isn't getting fired anytime soon, and that's a really good football team. Nick Sirianni is in his second Super Bowl, and he's made the playoffs every year as the Eagles coach. That worked out. Here was Mike McCarthy. If we're talking recent press conferences within the last few years, this was Mike McCarthy basically admitting to lying to get the Cowboys job.
I need to confess. I mean, I told Jerry I watched every play of the 2019 season, but I wanted the job. So... I haven't watched every play of the season, but it was just, I mean, you do what you got to do, right?
Did you hear the one, the second to last? Here's Jerry thought it was funny, and then it hit him. Like, wait a second.
Yeah, I got duped.
He's really making me look like a doofus again.
All right, so does Mike McCarthy... Now, Mike McCarthy didn't even get to a conference championship game. Both the two guys we just played did. He did win a lot of games in Dallas.
Yeah.
So does Mike McCarthy, where is he on the, like, it didn't work out, didn't get to a conference title game. They're still sitting on a 30-year drought. I would say that one probably didn't work out. Maybe the lesson there is that lying is, you know, karma comes back to bite you.
No, I think it's a really, I don't, but we talked about it earlier. Hey, sometimes... being a bad person is the best thing you can do for success.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, and landing a job, I guess Mike McCarthy just illustrated to all the youth of America right there. Lie.
What a great example you said.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, hey, lie. Lie until they find you out. That's right. That's my secret to success.
Right, right. And even openly admit it at a press conference right in front of the people who just hired you. Who cares?
I'll say, what year did they hire him?
I think like 2020, maybe 2020.
So they've won. So they won one wild card game in that time.
Wow!
They ended up 1-3 in the playoffs. Okay. So no, it was a failure. Given how much they spend and the quarter they have their quarterback and all of that,
failure.
That was a failure.
Failure. Well, yeah. as Jerry Jones reminded all of us yesterday, Seth,
there's a very low percentage of this that is smiles and glory holes.
Mm-hmm.
Very low percentage.
Yeah, he brought up glory holes again, which you would have thought at some point one of his advisors said, hey, that old glory hole clip of yours.
Oh, yeah, because Jerry sounds like someone who listens to his advisors.
Right, exactly, exactly. He just, nope, that's going to be part of the lexicon, son. Yeah. So I'm going to say glory hole in press conferences every now and then, and you're going to have to deal with it.
Yeah.
And then he went on an adamant defense of himself where, you know, he was angry that people have said that he always does the comfortable thing. And then he went into a long tirade about how he would spend any amount of money to win a championship. And you're listening, you're like, yeah, Jerry, that's the problem. It's that you equate everything back to money. Meanwhile, Michael Irvin and other people have just publicly said, Jerry does all these things that don't help you win because mm-hmm. he's so focused on the money
yeah.
and the ballyhoo and the publicity and everything else that he makes it really difficult for a coach. So no, you are not willing to do anything. Willing to spend money is not the same as willing to do anything.
Right. Well, he literally...
You know, it's just not... That's one thing that you can do more than anybody else, but that's different than anything. There are things outside of spending money that you can do.
He literally said yesterday, while sitting next to Brian Schottenheimer, the guy he just hired,
yeah.
something to the effect... Well, maybe I can go find the audio. We can play it later if we want to. Like, something to the effect of, I could not be taking a bigger risk than the one I'm taking right now. He's a first-time head coach.
But it's true.
Thanks, guy.
It's true, but he still just doesn't get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always a risk hiring any head coach, but he's hiring a coach that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, that nobody else has ever really looked. He inadvertently takes risks because he does want it to be comfortable. He wants a do-boy.
Yeah.
He wants a guy that's not going to try to stand in his way when it comes to inviting people into the facility, into all this distraction into the organization. He wants somebody that's going to let him be Jerry Jones. He's willing to do everything except accept the advice of everybody pretty much everywhere that you need to scale things back a little bit on some of the extraneous activity.
All right. We are headed to Radio Row next week. We'll be there a week from now. We'll be there. We head there on Sunday. We'll be broadcasting all week long from Radio Row in New Orleans, all thanks to Flight by Yuengling. Flight by Yuengling is sending us there. They're the presenting sponsor. We love Flight by Yuengling. Thank them for that. Low T Center as well, supporting sponsor, sending us there. And the hot seat that we will be having many a guest in, good guests, I promise you that, is sponsored by Exclusive Furniture. So thank you to Exclusive Furniture. Up next, it turns out something we were all touting as a reason why the Texans would take that next step in 2024 wound up being incredibly overrated. We will tell you what that is coming up next.